My guest this afternoon is Tom Force, and he is an attorney, and he is president of the Patriot Group. And what I'd like him to do is I'd like him to say hello to us this afternoon. Hello, Tom. How are you?
Thank you so much for inviting me, Susan. This is Tom Force, and I've been in health insurance and health care for well over 20 years. And as I'm sure many of you can attest, health care is an extremely complex and confusing and sometimes overwhelming area of the law. And I wanted to discuss a little bit today about denials and how you can reverse some of the denials and what you should do in order to avoid a situation where you receive a coverage denial.
Okay. So just to kind of give a little bit of background, many people get insurance information from their insurance companies, and I know from the people who wind up calling me and asking me for help on a personal level, a lot of people don't really pay attention to them. As far as they're concerned, I'm covered. I have insurance. I don't have to worry about this. The doctor's office told me everything would be okay, and they don't even look at those pieces of paper that come through. Has that been your experience?
Oh, absolutely. And, there is a misconception out there, even among physicians and hospital clients of mine, that because the insurance companies have all the money, they seem to have unlimited resources, and many people feel that they set the rules, that, you know, it's just an overwhelming process. You know, how do I dispute a denial against such a powerful insurance company? That is a misconception. Actually, the reverse is true. And Susan hit the nail on the head. You have to be proactive. You have to be that the reverse is true. The insurance companies, unlike the patient consumer and unlike the physicians out there, they have statutory and other responsibilities that they have to comply with. And that's some of the topics that I'd like to discuss. Now, with respect to being proactive, obviously the first step to ensure that your claims are paid is to make sure that you register online with your insurance company. And why should you do that?
We're talking about the patients here. This is something the patients should be doing?
This is something that the patients should do. Every insurance company now has online access. And when you register online, there's a couple things that a patient gets as far as benefits. First of all, you can receive a copy of your plan documents, which means your insurance policy, the various limitations to the policy, which is very important to have. You have to understand what your coverage is.
Wait a minute. I'm going to interrupt you. I have seen some of those things, and I've been in this business for over 20 years myself. It's total mumbo-jumbo, and it's really hard to figure out. Why should I do that? Or when should I do that?
Well,
when should I get that information?
You should get that information when you get a denial. There's a more important reason, though, why you want to get access to the, become a member and online registration, is because you can follow your claim. You can make sure that your medical claim gets received. You'll get the claim number, and you can see how it is processed. You don't have to rely upon the mail when the insurance company sends the check, the explanation of benefits, or the denial.
Okay.
That's very, very important.
So now, are insurance companies required to do this, or is this just the big, important insurance companies that might have more money and better systems that do this?
Well, I'm not necessarily certain that they're required to have online access, but I do want to mention some of the requirements of the insurance companies. And once you understand these requirements, the issue with regard to how to fight a denied claim will, I think, become very apparent. So I'd like to discuss a couple of the obligations that the insurance companies have, Susan. And the first and foremost obligation that they have is to comply with what we call the state prompt payment law. And that law can be found in the New York Insurance Code and it's actually section 3224A. But if you go on any website, Google, and you put in New York State Prompt Payment Law, section 3224A, either a summary or the law can be easily pulled up. And what I'd like to say about that law, why it's so important, is that law requires the insurance company to do a couple things. First of all, it requires that if they're going to deny a claim, that they have to deny the claim within 30 days of their receipt of the claim. Very, very important. The second thing is if they don't deny a claim, they have to pay the claim within 45 days, unless, of course, your physician submitted the claim electronically. Then they have to pay the claim within 30 days. If they don't pay the claim within 30 or 45 days, Susan, they have to pay statutory interest on that claim.
Okay. So how do we keep track of all these different dates and time frames and what kinds of claims would you want to be worried about with this? Would this just be any old claim, or are these more likely just to be the ones that are maybe higher value, or I don't know. What would be the criteria?
Well, here's the thing. It's not as confusing as you think. There's two time periods that you need to understand. One, 30 days from receipt. The insurance company absolutely has to deny a claim in writing within 30 days of their receipt. And if they deny it, they have to set forth in writing the reason for the denial in plain language. That is absolutely critical. So when you get, for example, a denial of a claim, it'll usually come in the form of what we refer to as an EOB, or explanation of benefits, which is nothing more than a written processed your claim. Now, again, if you registered online, you'll be able to get the status of the claim a heck of a lot quicker than waiting for the EOB in the mail. But so let's say now you've gotten an EOB from an insurance company for a surgery that you recently had. And the first thing I'm suggesting that you look at is the date of the EOB. If you feel that that date, for example, is 2 months after the service, and you find out that the claim was submitted, let's say, within 5 days of the service, you can get that claim overturned simply because the insurance company violated their prompt payment law obligation. So what you would do is you would send an appeal letter with a copy of the EOB to the address that's on the EOB, because another requirement is the insurance company has to have an address where you can submit a written appeal on the explanation of benefit form.
Wait a second. I have a question here. You're telling me that it's possible that an insurance company would make a simple mistake like that, that would be such in opposition to the most basic rule, such as, you know, within a certain number of days?
Believe it or not, my practice, I deal with appealed claims day in and day out. Think of it this way. Insurance companies like Blue Cross and United Healthcare, they're multi-billion dollar companies. They deal with millions and millions and millions of claims every day.
But wait a second. The second that my claim is too old, they certainly have no problem denying it for that reason. So why can't they? So you're saying they keep better track of one set of dates than another set of dates.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Remember, these are stock-owned companies. And regardless of what a lot of the insurance companies will tell you, they're as a stock company, their obligation to their shareholders is to turn a profit. So what I'm suggesting to you is, regardless of the reason for the denial, you need to look at the EOB, determine whether or not the claim was denied within 30 days of their receipt, determine if the reason for the denial is in plain language and is it set forth on the EOB. If it is denied well after the 30-day period, and it happens all the time, every day I see this.
Unbelievable.
You would send an appeal letter and simply put in the caption, appeal level number one, violation of prompt payment law, and simply state that the service was done on X date, the claim was submitted on Y date, and The EOB is dated 60 days, not within 30 days of receipt. They violated the prompt payment law, and the claim must be paid and with interest.
Wow. Okay. So now I know also people who, and again, this is not as much from my professional side, but more from my personal side, because I'm thinking a little bit from the patient angle, because that's like who our audience might be more likely to be today. I don't know that how when someone starts getting letters or whatever from their doctor, a lot of times they tend to ignore them because they figure it's the doctor's problem to work it out with the insurance company. It almost sounds like this could be a way for patients to help the doctors too by encouraging them to check these different dates and to make sure that that's not the reason for the denial. Because I know for myself, I've had trouble with, actually once it was a dentist whose office clearly didn't understand what they were doing. And they kept trying to flip it back to me that it was my responsibility. And when I called the insurance company was simply looking for additional information. That was their reason for denying.
Yes. Keep in mind, as unfair as this sounds, the physician's office doesn't have the contractual obligation to submit the claim. The patient does. The physician's office, as a courtesy, submits the claim to the insurance company for their patient. If the physician's office makes a mistake in submitting the claim, or in your instance, Susan, doesn't respond to a reasonable request from the insurance company for additional information, guess what? The patient is responsible, and it is very likely that the physician office will send a bill to the patient for the full charges, or even in some cases, put the patient in collections. So it is very important, as far as being, with respect to being proactive, which is the theme here, in addition to registering online, the second thing you should do, in my opinion, is to call the insurance company prior to the service, of course, if it's not an emergency, like an ER emergency room situation, and get a see if a pre-authorization is required. And if it is, get the pre-authorization. Don't rely on a doctor's office to get it for you, because ultimately it's your responsibility. And if a pre-authorization is not required, verify what the coverage is, and always document the date, time, and the person you spoke to from the insurance company. Very important, in the event that you get a denial, that you can state in your appeal letter that on a certain date you spoke to a certain representative named Mary, and that she told you at this time, and this is the number you called, that this claim did not require pre-authorization. Because under the law, if an insurance company provides you an oral verification that a pre-authorization is not required, and then later the insurance company denies for pre-auth, under what's called promissory estoppel, you can get that denial reversed and paid with interest under the prompt pay law.
Wow. It's it just is amazing to me, because I think people have gotten, medical care has gotten so much more involved with people. It's evolved so much, and there's so much more of it available, and it's gotten so much more expensive. And I know as consumers, everybody wants what they want when they want it, and they're not expecting to have to pay for it. And that is something that has really changed dramatically, even just over the last few years.
Well, I tell you, in addition to, I hear what you're saying, and I agree. In addition to be proactive, the second thing I would say is that you have to hold the insurance company accountable to the law. It's absolutely essential to understand the most basic concepts of insurance law, like the prompt payment law. That is a very, very powerful tool and weapon for you to use to get your claims paid. Now, what happens if there was a violation of the prompt payment law, Susan, and you submit an appeal and the appeal is denied? Well, first of all, I will tell you this. When you submit an appeal, you absolutely need to follow up with the insurance company within 30 days to make sure they got the appeal, because I would say I might file 100 appeals a week. Maybe 50 of them, according to the insurance company, has not been received, and we have to resend them, because the appeals are generally sent to a PO box, which, frankly, I think is a problem with the law. It would be great if the appeals could be sent to an email address or to a fax number so you can have confirmation that it was sent. No. Most insurance companies require appeals be sent to a P.O. box. And, of course, you can send those appeals certified mail return receipt, even if it's to a P.O. box. And I do recommend that. But you absolutely need to follow up because, just like your insurance policy will have some requirements that if you're going to appeal a claim, it has to be done within 30 days or 45 days or 60 days. And you should know what those deadlines are and absolutely make sure that your appeal was received and, if possible, get a claim or reference number. Now, if that claim is ultimately denied, there's a couple things that you can do that I think are very important to note. First of all, you filed the first level appeal now. Here's the hypothetical. You feel that there was a violation of the prompt payment law. You filed the appeal, it was received, and ultimately denied. What you should do at that point is file, or if your appeal wasn't responded to within 30 days, you should file an appeal with a complaint, rather, with the New York State Department of Insurance. And that Department of Insurance regulates the insurance companies, and the complaint form can be readily found on the internet. But I do have a site, Susan, if you want me to give it.
Absolutely. And what I'll also do is remind listeners that you can go to WUSB.FM and look at our playlists, and I will have all the information from our show today on that playlist, including contact information for myself and for Tom Force. So, again, my guest today is Tom Force, and he is with the Patriot Group, and we've got some contact information for him. But you're going to give out that website address?
Our website is www.patriotcompli.com.
Okay.
And thanks, Susan.
You were going to give out...
Now, that's Patriot's website. Now, if you want to file a complaint with the Department of Insurance in New York, which governs the insurance companies for insured plans, you would go to www.ins.state.ny.us/compl.how.htm. Or you can simply go Google the New York State Department of Insurance, go on their website, and search complaint form, and you'll find it. Also, I want to advise your listeners that the New York State Attorney General's Office also maintains a health bureau, and you can also file a complaint with the New York State Attorney General's Health Bureau at www.ag.ny.gov/bureaus with an S. That's bureaus.health/care/pdfs/complaint-form.pdf. But the easiest way, if you miss that long, cumbersome website address, go to the New York State Attorney General New York State Attorney General Health Bureau complaint form. If you Google it, it most certainly will come up.
I'm desperately trying to type this as he's talking. So again, check the website and look for the playlist for today's show, 1 to 2:30. The name of the show is Everything Is Broken.
Now, here's a couple other things to consider. Let's say the denial was sent by the insurance company within 30 days of receipt, and you believe the denial is improper. Okay? I strongly suggest you still send the written appeal, and if you lose your first level appeal, you file a complaint with the Department of Insurance like we just discussed. I do want to mention real quickly, without getting overly technical, that if the denial is for a reason, is for experimental, lack of medical necessity, or because the insurance company feels that claim involved investigational treatment or involved rare diseases, You can file, after your first level appeal, an appeal outside the scope of the insurance company. It's called an external appeal. So if it involved, if the denial involves experimental, cosmetic, medical necessity, rare disease, or even involves possibly an out-of-network provider, you can file an external appeal, and the website, and you have to file it within 45 days of the plan's final adverse determination. And again, you can find that on the Department of Insurance in New York's website, which is www.ins.state.ny.us/extapp.pdf. Now, again, if you go on Google or Yahoo and you search New York State Department of Insurance External Appeal determination form, you will certainly find the form that you need to fill out. It's a pretty easy two-page document.
All right, so I'm going to back up again here. A lot of the things that you're talking about are so timely. Now, I'm just a regular Joe or Jane patient, and I had what to me didn't seem like it was going to be a really big deal. I mean, my doctor through the whole thing made me feel like it was just a regular routine thing. Everybody has this, or it's a common solution to the problem that I was having. And when I went to the hospital or to the ambulatory surgery center, the same thing. They were all professional. Everything was all worked out. 30 days, I might just be recuperating. I'm not going to be all worried about did something work or not work, or maybe the first time the doctor billed the insurance, it didn't quite work out. They made a mistake. How do I know? Or you know, and I don't know. I'm feeling like, oh my goodness, if I'm not on top of this every single time for everything, I could be in big trouble.
I think it's important. That's a good point, and I think it's important to coordinate with your physician's office, their billing department. So if you're going to send an appeal, it would be a good idea to send the office a copy of your appeal. It would be a good idea to coordinate or contact the billing department at the physician's office to coordinate with them so that you're both on the same page. But you're right in that many of the issues involving appeals involve a very tight time frame. And unfortunately, that's the world that we exist in with respect to healthcare denials and appeals. So again, the best way to avoid a situation of getting a denial that you're too late to appeal is to be proactive. Now, if you are too sick to handle these type of issues, then you should appoint a spouse or a trusted friend to assist you and to coordinate with the physician's office to make sure that these type of issues are taken care of. I do want to point out that the Department of Insurance and the Attorney General's Health Bureau are very, very consumer friendly. If when in doubt or if you're in a position where you don't know what to do, I would contact those two state agencies. They're very, very helpful in helping consumers through the labyrinth that we call health insurance.
Okay, so we talked a little bit about it from the patient's perspective. What might patients either encourage their medical practice, their practitioners to do, or if you or someone you know is a medical practitioner, what are some things that they might do to better arm themselves or to put in place some processes so that they can not have to antagonize the patient over these issues and they can just get the insurance company to buck up the first time like they're supposed to?
It is critical that for any health claim that the medical office does proper eligibility before the service is performed. How you can help the physician's office or the hospital to do that is make sure that you have the correct health insurance ID card and insist that they take the front and back a copy of the front and back of the ID card. It is most physician and hospital officers are the ones that do the eligibility, which means they contact the insurance company to verify that you actually have the coverage that's present on the ID card, and they also verify whether there's a coinsurance or a deductible that applies that might be your responsibility at the time of service. So I would encourage you to speak to the billing department prior to service, make sure that they verified eligibility, but again, be proactive. You also contact the insurance company. Make sure that you are covered for this physician, number one. Number two, that the physician is an in-network provider, which means they are part of the PPO network or the provider network for that particular insurance company. Make sure that verify what your coinsurance is for that particular service. Is it a $20 office visit coinsurance, or is it a specialty where you might have to pay 50% as a coinsurance? Do you have an annual deductible that may apply? The deductible usually applies in the first 3 months of the year. That's when you really should be concerned mostly about that. But communication and coordination with the physician's office can, in my opinion, avoid the disaster of having a claim that's not only not covered, but too late to do anything about, Susan.
Right. And I know from my experiences, and this would be from the working with providers and practitioners, some offices really are very buttoned up. They're aware of all these things, and they take good care of them. And a lot of them just have not really caught up with the proper toolkit to be able to I hate to say it this way, but defend themselves with the way the insurance companies have begun operating over the last several years, particularly practitioners who have been at it for quite a while. Maybe they were used to the point in time when the insurance paid for the services that they were supposed to pay for, and things weren't as contentious. And I think maybe that was before, as you mentioned before, before it became such a stockholder's such a high-stakes business operation. If you know anything about finance, you know that so many of these insurance and drug companies are just raking it in hand over fist from a profitability standpoint. And they do make some of their money by collecting premiums from you, but the way they really make their money is by minimizing their expenses, which is payouts.
I will tell you this, and if there's any people out there in your audience that work in the healthcare revenue business, certainly physicians and hospital administrators, they will tell you that over the last 2 to 3 years, we are seeing an immense spike in the number of denials by insurance companies, denials that we frankly haven't seen in the past. The other thing that we're seeing, frankly, from the insurance companies, is requests for takebacks of money. That is really spiked up within the last 12 months. What that means is the insurance company pays a claim, and then either their fraud department or their auditors determine that the claim really shouldn't have been paid. So they're going to go back to either the patient or the physician to recoup that money.
They go back to the physician. I've seen tons and tons of them. It is one of the primary ways that the various insurance companies, in particular the government insurance, Medicare and Medicaid, it is the way that they are instituting so much of this savings. And I will also tell you that it is very rarely their auditors or their internal fraud department. They outsource this. They outsource this to companies who do it on a contingent fee basis, which basically says, if I can recover $10,000 from the doctors and the patients, although I see it mostly being from the doctors, then I'll get a percentage of that fee. So it's in there. It's in their financial interest to cast the widest net possible and try to take back as much as possible and hope that the doctors either won't have the energy or the resources to challenge these, because a lot of times the ones I've seen, many of the claims are going back 2 and 3 years. And if they do, a lot of times you need the patient's cooperation to work through those. Well, maybe you haven't seen that patient in a year, or maybe that patient has expired or moved out of state and you aren't able to get in touch with them, and you really don't have recourse, or you, I shouldn't say that, it's not easy recourse to challenge those. So that is a huge problem for medical providers right now.
I will say that for the non-government payers, and I'm not talking about Medicare or Medicaid right now, I'm talking about the Blue Crosses of the world, the United Healthcares. There is a statute that's helpful to the consumer and the doctors and hospitals. It is part of the prompt pay law. It's a section 3224-B. We talked about 3224-A earlier. And in that section, it says that insurance companies can't go back more than 24 months from the date of their payment. And that's an interesting provision because, like Susan said, we see insurance companies going back 5 to 10 years. And the only way an insurance company can rightfully go back more than 2 years is for fraud. And I can tell you as an attorney that fraud is very, very difficult under the law to prove. So, you know, the easiest way to combat that is to call the insurance carrier's bluff and say, show me the evidence of fraud that you have that permits you to go back more than 2 years. Now, with respect to the 0 to 2 year claims, my experience, and maybe it's experience of Susan as well, is that, you know, at least 50% of those alleged takebacks are not proper takeback requests. And there was arguably a question as to whether or not the takeback was valid.
Absolutely.
And it should be a clear-cut issue. If they're requesting a takeback, it should be a clear-cut issue. For example, we paid $100 and Mr. Smith was not covered under the plan. That's not what I'm finding.
Nope, that's not what I'm finding at all either. It's esoteric, very specific. And then the other is you'll get pummeled with a whole bunch of small requests, and it's not like there's a standard form to reply on. It's not like there's a standard place to reply to. You can't speak to a person to ask any questions. It's really, really puts the provider at a disadvantage to deal with those kinds of situations. So I guess from the provider's standpoint, I would encourage any patients out there, if your doctor's offices contact you and ask for some help resolving some of this information, for example, maybe to sort out a coordination of benefits issue that that might have been in effect at the time, you know, please do help them. Hopefully you might think that they help you, and since they help you, you'll help them out. And actually, the truth of the matter is, as Tom mentioned previously, if you don't, if the provider is not able to reconcile it, it does become your responsibility. You will get the bill from that physician.
One last point on that, on those takebacks, Susan, is that if you're either a patient or a physician's office and you receive one, you absolutely have to respond in writing and dispute the takeback.
Within the time frames.
Within the time frames, and I don't know, Susan, if you have those offhand, but there are definite time frames under the statute that you have to respond in writing and dispute the debt. So I would simply say that I received your take back of such and such a date, and I dispute that a payment refund is due to the insurance company, and you know, unambiguously dispute the debt, the take back request rather, in writing.
See, yeah, I don't believe they call them debts.
Right. Well, they want – the other issue is they don't want this to be a consumer debt.
Exactly. Because then they have to go under FDCPA.
Right. They have to comply with the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. And I've actually had discussions, and I actually have a matter going to trial next month on that very issue, whereas an insurance company is claiming that it's not a consumer debt and therefore their vendor doesn't have to comply with the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, yet the vendor is a collection agency.
Wow.
Go figure.
You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. It's 2:01 on a Tuesday afternoon, and my guest this afternoon is Tom Force, and he is president of the Patriot Group. He's got offices in Bayshore and your phone number here that we have if people wanted to contact you for additional information, 631-665-1880. And this, if you've got any questions or you missed any of that contact information, you can always get in touch with me. You can call here in the studio, 631-632-6901, or you can send an email. And again, that information will be posted on our playlist at the WUSB.FM is where the playlist is. So, Tom, I want to thank you for being my guest this afternoon. And I guess just to summarize, whether you're a patient or a provider of service, if you receive denials from the insurance companies for medical claims, don't just accept it and say, woe is me, or those blasted insurance companies. You do have plenty of remedies at your fingertips to try to compel them to pay for services that they really are responsible to pay for often.
I couldn't agree more, Susan. And thank you so much. And to the listeners, it was really fun. I appreciate you inviting me.
Thank you.